This is Liberation Radio.
Capitalism needs poverty.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
Whatever we could do, we're gonna do, especially in continuing to preserve this earth.
Each week, we bring you interviews, commentary, analysis, political developments, and struggles affecting workers throughout the country as a way to build the movement for socialism in the United States.
The revolution will be broadcast.
The only thing that will ever defeat racism will be the defeat of its parents, capitalism and imperialism.
Without smashing mass incarceration, working people of all nationalities cannot have justice.
Liberation Radio is brought to you by the Party for Socialism and Liberation.
Welcome to Liberation Radio. I'm your host, Sean Garcia. On this episode, we hear about the movement that led to May Day. We speak with Akbar Muhammad, International Representative of the Nation of Islam. But first, Liberation Radio brings you the voices of the people of Baltimore from the heart of the uprising after the police murder of Freddie Gray. Tens of thousands of people have come out in Baltimore and around the country demanding justice.
I'm Eugene Perrier. I'm here in Baltimore with Liberation News, and we've had an opportunity with our reporting team, along with other progressive journalists, to get out into the streets and participate in demonstrations, as well as move around the community and get the thoughts of individuals who have been involved, have not been involved. And the audio that we want to bring you this week on Liberation Radio from Baltimore comes from those experiences. The particular interviews that you will hear are courtesy of Rania Kalik, a journalist with the Electronic Intifada, and are indicative of the sentiments that we were hearing all across the city, both in organized activities and just on the street. The situation in Baltimore is tense. We are under a curfew, and that curfew has really shuts the city down just after dark. There are a number of protest activities that are going on all day. Groups are organizing, doing various different things. There is a strong sense of community in Baltimore. We were able to attend a march with the East Side and the West Side, who are often portrayed as having conflict, having beef. We're coming together to unify, to demand justice for Freddie Gray. So we are seeing an activated, mobilized, and motivated community here in Baltimore that in the wake of the events that captured the imagination of the whole country have continued to push forward and have a very strong determination to continue this struggle to get not only answers as to the circumstances surrounding the death of Freddie Gray, the murder of Freddie Gray, but also to make sure that there's justice in that case. People here understand that this is not an isolated incident in Baltimore or around the country and are very conscious of this having the opportunity to continue to jumpstart the Black Lives Matter movement. I'm here from Washington, D.C., and there's been nothing but acceptance of folks who are not from this area, but are coming to genuinely support. So here on Liberation Radio, this is the first of commentaries that we will have coming out of the Baltimore uprising.
What year are you?
Second year?
Yeah.
What's your name?
William
Mary, yes. And you're from around here?
Yes.
Cool. Were you protesting yesterday?
Yeah, I was protesting, but all the shenanigans, I leave that alone. Because I'm already tied up. From we job here, job there in school. So
you
should
know.
I got two, so you should, if you haven't been to college, you should know how that runs. It's really difficult. You feel me?
Are you in school full time? Full time?
No.
You can't
it's still difficult.
Jobs,
yeah, it's still difficult. So at the end of the day, but what I was saying to them, I really don't think it's that. I ain't saying racial profiling. But if you look at the Trayvon Martin situation, in other different states, it's always been police on black youths. Just like in Baltimore, Maryland, it's a police on black youth. So only thing I say is, the community can voice their opinion, but I feel as though our black leaders, like the NCAACP or Reverend Al Sharpton and the other leaders from different states or anything, the president,
anything like that.
The so-called thugs, they want to hear our voice.
Really know what the...
all the way from L.A.
Really going on. They really look at us as poor, like... They wouldn't look at us like I would go goddess because my image of tattoos.
You're
going to
end up like, you're talking about like Al Sharpton.
But I'm just saying, pretty, it's just like, it's like the police down here. I'm not going to say all them bad, all them good, but it's just like, I go to college, you feel what I'm saying? They get a car of a black man walking down the street, you feel what I'm saying? Don't know it's which guy, he just got all black. Some just might be walking for the campus or anything. They just grabbed me for an armed robbery, something I told he didn't do. Something I don't want to do. Something I don't need on my record, because that's why I'm going to college to improve, to get about this lifestyle. No, I'm just saying, I hope it don't. You get what I'm saying? But the only reason I be down here, because this is my neighbor, this is my childhood friend, and my homeboy, that was my homeboy that passed away, yeah. And all of us grew up, like, regardless, like, everything we do.
How old are you?
I'm 24. Yeah. Everything we do, I just grew up like.
Would you grow up in the same housing?
Yeah, same housing.
Gilmore.
Yeah, it's just a zone. We just call it Zone 17.
Why? Because
yeah, because it's just a big neighborhood. It's just like a big neighborhood. We just call it Zone 17. And this part of Zone 17. But all the other stuff, I can't get with that. It wouldn't look right on my brother.
Do you, I mean, the call, I thought this was kind of staggering. 70% of the police in Baltimore police are from outside of Baltimore. Some of them come from, like, Pennsylvania and New Jersey, which I thought was kind of crazy.
I'm sorry, if you really look at it, like, even though Baltimore is small, they need the help because police can't contain us. Ain't no police in the army that's more bigger than, citizens. There's more citizens than armies than anything. Citizens born every day. The citizens die every day. You got what I'm saying? Like, but it's just something, like I just told you, all the big leaders need to get together and decide what they're going to do.
Anyways, go ahead, sorry.
Like I said, the community of those they please, but they really need a lot of big leaders, as far as whatever type of leader you in, NAACP, Al Revis Sharpton, any church leaders, any type of leaders, any leaders in other countries that see what's going on. And then I just heard on the news there's other states that's riding off of what we doing. You get what I'm saying? Why is y'all doing that? Because we black, because y'all black, and y'all feeling thought y'all having the same problems in y'all city. Because that's how they sympathize, that's how other cities take it. Oh, my brother just died like that too, so we might as well do the same thing.
Well, also, you know, no one was really paying attention. I know that there's been a lot of people who've been, like, a lot of people killed by the police. Like, there's terrible arrests with police as well. Like, this has been happening in Baltimore for a while, obviously. But it got attention because CBS was there. So, like, it's like, do you think that if it wasn't burned, there would be this much, like, if people didn't come out with things and get angry, like, would there be attention? Like, now there's national attention on this issue.
I'm saying, these, like, at the end of the day, if you really look at it, you don't see too many grown people. These delinquents.
But it's the message that it sends. It's the fact that nobody pays attention until it gets crazy.
At the end of the day, this is what I said. Like, I ain't going to put them as a blame because I've been reading this as a knucklehead, too, but... Eventually, people change their lives around. And I'm going to say the delinquents, because I was a delinquent before. So delinquents is, what I mean by that is, they mind their dogs, they do what they want, stay out late at night and stuff like that. So delinquents do what they want. You feel what I'm saying? Don't mean they go to school, they can't be delinquents. You feel what I'm saying? You see what they did? Ain't too many people getting control of their delinquents.
So what are the, like, it sounds like there's a lot of other issues just besides the police issue. Like...
Me personally, this only thing is my problem is about the situation about Freddie is, what does the police stand for? Protect yourself, not beating, sir. So y'all did all that to that black man. You feel what I'm saying? Did y'all try to cover up evidence and stuff like that? But how did the community supposed to respond off of that? You feel what I'm saying? And speaking of that, his father is a nation. So how do the nation respond off of that? Yeah. You feel me? Everybody looking at it in different ways, you feel what I'm saying? Everybody responding in different ways. I might respond to it as non-threatening. I might, you feel what I'm saying, talk about it, express myself, you feel what I'm saying?
because I don't gotta be, you feel me, physical, blah, blah, blah. Anybody else, like I said, delinquents. Be physical, you feel me? Because a lot of delinquents these days you can't talk to. You feel what I'm saying? They want to be knuckleheads, they want to be this, they want to be that. That's why I say some real group league, because you feel Baltimore small, and it's a lot of small communities here and there. We don't have a lot of group leaders. You feel what I'm saying? We just got people out here. You feel what I'm saying? Some people come out here and preach here and there. Well, we don't really got a lot of group leaders, but brothers and stuff like that. You know, we need some real strong group leaders, some revolutionary and stuff like that. We're really gonna get the job done. If you ain't gonna really get the job done, step down and get somebody who's gonna get the job done. You know what I'm saying?
How do you respond to people who say that, like, the mayor is black and the police chief is black, so, like, why are you guys so angry? That's what people actually have said that.
Hey man, at the end of the day, some people say people black, and some people say people got white souls. You get what I'm saying? What I mean by that is, like, I ain't been raised with a silver spoon. Just say for instance, I've been living with y'all. We living out Malibu. You feel what I'm saying? I'm black, and I've been around y'all so many. You feel me? And I pick up y'all asset, and then I try to come back home. They gonna say, man, you like them? You a black person living in a white? You get what I'm saying? That's how people look at stuff like that. It'll be crazy.
Liberation Radio thanks Rania Kalik, a journalist with Electronic Intifada, for the audio for this soundbite. To get ongoing coverage of the Baltimore Rebellion, please check out liberationnews.org. Next, we hear a commentary from Liz Lowengard, a member of the Party for Socialism and Liberation in Washington, D.C., where she discusses the history of International Workers' Day, also known as May Day, and how we can gain lessons from it for the task facing us today.
Today, May 1st, is International Workers' Day, also known as May Day. May 1st celebrates working people all around the world and their struggles to end exploitation and oppression. May Day is the product of workers' struggle, a fact that is attested to by the vast majority of countries declaring it an official holiday as a concession to the combined power of workers to shut down their societies. The United States is not one of these countries. In fact, in the United States, there's an entirely separate holiday, Labor Day, that does everything possible to avoid the connection between the struggles of workers in this country and their brothers and sisters around the world. So it may surprise many people to hear then that International Workers' Day is a holiday that originated to honor the struggle of American workers. During the 1880s, massive movements of working people, with the participation of socialists, communists, anarchists, and radicals of all types, swept the United States protesting against the terrible labor conditions that abounded. 12-hour days, unsafe working conditions, and low, low pay. Workers' organizations raised up the issue of an 8-hour day, something that quickly caught on. On Tuesday, May 4th, 1886, Chicago's powerful labor movement called a general strike for an 8-hour day. While attempting to disperse the protests called during the strike, the police ultimately opened fire on the protesters. Several police officers were killed. This led to a violent crackdown that eventually led to the execution of leaders of the movement by the state, the Haymarket Martyrs, as they would become known. Meeting in 1889 in Paris, the Second International, an international organization of socialist parties with millions of members around the world, chose May 1st as International Workers' Day to commemorate the Haymarket Martyrs. Since that time, revolutionaries around the world have flown the red flag on May 1st to commemorate the cause of workers in struggle. Here in the United States, May Day was revived as a day for mass protests during the massive waves of strikes in 2006 by immigrant workers who called a general strike that shook the nation and catapulted immigration issues into the center of the political sphere. In our current moment, We know that working people are continuing to struggle more than ever while the capitalists keep getting richer and richer. Struggles for working and oppressed people are rising, most recently in Baltimore, Maryland. Revolutionaries must do everything we can to fan the flames of rebellion. Today, and every May 1st, let us remember the struggles of the past, the present, and those we will wage in the future. Today, May 1st, is International Workers' Day.
You're tuned into Liberation Radio, and you can check out our website, liberationradio.org, on Facebook at facebook.com/Liberation Radio Show, and on Twitter at the handle Liberation Radio. Finally, we hear part one of an interview with Akbar Muhammad, International Representative of the Nation of Islam, where he speaks about his arrest and multi-year persecution at the hands of the Guyanese government, which worked with the U.S. government to place false drug and terrorism charges on him for his many years of work with the Guyanese working class. You can hear part two of this interview next week.
I'm Eugene Perrier, and we are here on Liberation Radio with Minister Akbar Muhammad, the International Representative of the Nation of Islam. Minister Muhammad, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, and it's good to be back on the show again.
And so we want to get directly or soon into what has been a multi-year saga for you of persecution, but I want to, before that, give a little background context. Can you say a little bit about your diplomatic work, so people have some sense of how you ended up in Guyana, which we will talk about?
Well, I've been the international representative for the Nation of Islam and Minister Louis Farrakhan for many years, and I can't tell you the number right now, but it really started in my international work for him when he moved me to Ghana in West Africa. Though I was traveling for him and doing international work before that, but my 12 years in Ghana kind of solidified the work, and I would travel and represent Minister Farrakhan in many parts of the world and in Africa. During that time, I was blessed to visit 44 African nations, and to date, and I'm proud to say it in my work, I visited 144 nations in the world. And one of my trips and my work was in the country of Guyana in South America. I had been to Suriname, Guyana, never to French Guyana, but in that Caribbean basin, I've been to Venezuela. And there's a follower in the Nation of Islam out of Canada, Brother Philip. Brother Philip is from Guyana, but a citizen of Canada, and his real hope was to kind of move the people into consciousness in Guyana, in particular the black community that had been suffering under Indian-dominated government. I had been to Guyana as far back as 1976, and my audience with Forbes Burnham. At that time, I was working with Imam Waruddin Muhammad, who was the leader of the Nation of Islam at that time. So I had been there, beautiful country, the tragedy of 1978 with the Jonestown killing, and it left a bitter taste in my mouth for people who take advantage of the plight of black people in America, who are looking for alternative routes to solve some of the social issues that they're challenged with in their personal life, a drug addiction, a life of crime, in and out of jail, dysfunctional families. And so they joined Jim Jones, and as history will tell you, he used his influence over them and how they perceived them and caused those 900, I always said 69 people, but recently looking at a special, they say it was 938 people. I really don't know the truth of it. And it bothered me because I knew the potential of that country, the beauty of that country, and I know that the sincerity of President Burnham in terms of opening the door for the African American community who were in the liberation struggle, many of them set up in Guyana, and making Guyana known internationally by his progressive stand to join forces with progressive forces throughout the world. So I went, I was invited by Brother Philip because he felt that they needed to hear a message that would bring a level of consciousness. And Minister Farrakhan was very popular there. His trip in 1996 made a tremendous impact on the country in general and the black people in particular. So they invited me during Malcolm X's birthday, and I accepted the invitation, and Brother Philip, out of his own resources, would pay my transportation and hotel and so forth so that I could spend some time talking on TV and meeting with the people there. And I wanted to use Malcolm X's life, his involvement in drugs and criminal activity, and show how he was redeemed in prison, and instead of being a liability for his community, he became a tremendous asset. And so I went to a school in an area called Boxton, and I talked to, it was predominantly black, a few Indians in the class, and I talked to him about Malcolm's life. And one thing that was most interesting, I mentioned Burnham, who the present government had no love for him and his regime, and which I didn't understand all of the political dynamics. And I asked the students about him, and only, I think it was two students in the class, and these are students between 14 and 16 years old, knew the first president of the country, and I thought that was interesting. So that's how it unfolded. The next day, I was due to go on TV delivering the same kind of message, and it would have played to the whole country. I went to my hotel room, and about 2:30 in the morning, I get a knock on the door, and I was trying to figure out who was that coming to my room that time.
And this is on May 19th, correct? May 19th, Malcolm X's birthday.
Birthday, yes. And they banged on the door, and I asked who was. They said, the police, open up. And I said, well, I'm not opening up the door. I don't know if you the police or not. Then they said, are you Akbar Muhammad? I said, I am. They said, well, give us some ID. And I slid it under the door. And they said, well, you're the person we're looking for. Open the door. Then they threatened to knock the door down. I said, you don't have to do all of that. Let me put some clothes on. You know, I didn't do nothing wrong. So I opened the door, and they came in, and they said, you Akbar Muhammad? I said, I am. And we got information on you from the CIA that you're a drug runner. They use the word terminology, drug runner, and a terrorist. And I laughed. I said that you must have the wrong Akbar Muhammad. In Afghanistan and Pakistan and that part of the world, Akbar Muhammad is a pretty popular name. You just have the wrong person. And they insisted, you know, that they were going to take me down. They searched a few things in my room. And I said, fine, I'll get dressed. So I got dressed, and they took me to the police, the CID, they called it. And they questioned me a little. And some kind of way, Brother Philip got word. I don't know how, but I know what it was. Probably somebody called him, and because he had booked the hotel room. And he came to the jail, and they arrested him. And then it's a strange system down there. I still had my cell phone, and they were questioning me, and my phone rings, and it's my daughter from America. This is in the middle of the morning. It had to be maybe 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. And she said, Daddy, where are you? I said, I'm in Guyana. She said, you all right? I said, I'm fine. Because I didn't want to tell her what was happening. And she said, I got a call that you were arrested or something. I told her I'm fine. And I told her I'd call her back. So she didn't think it could be true because I got my cell phone. And I found out later that CNN had did a flash that Akbar Muhammad, one of the aides to Louis Farrakhan, has been detained in Guyana, South America, on the charges of terrorism and drug running. And they flashed it and it went everywhere. It was on their international. And Minister Farrakhan got worried about it. And the next morning, through one of our brothers who heads our operation in Guyana, that he had talked to the minister and facilitated a call between Minister Farrakhan and President Barack Jagdeo, who was the president at that time. They exchanged words, and the president assured the minister that if the person is innocent, we don't hold people here. And the minister said those charges against Akbar, as far as Pluto is from the Earth, and just that's not him. And so they took me to jail overnight, terrible jail, unbelievable. You know, not that this is my first time going to jail, demonstration during the time of Malcolm and whatnot, I had been to jail. But this is absolutely the worst I've ever seen.
That's all for Liberation Radio. I'm Sean Garcia. Please remember this program is available free for broadcast by community and public radio stations. You can encourage your local radio station to air Liberation Radio. They can visit liberationradio.org for details. And again, tune in next week for more from the Struggle for Justice.
You have been listening to Liberation Radio, a weekly program from the Party for Socialism and Liberation. You can find us online at liberationradio.org to listen to past shows and connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Some of what you heard during this program are Creative Commons licensed compositions. Our theme music and some music segments were performed by Six Fingers and used with permission of the artists. Liberation Radio is produced by the Party for Socialism and Liberation to help build the struggle for socialism in the United States. The PSL is a party of activists and organizers. We are in the streets at the demonstrations and picket lines, opposing cutbacks and attacks on workers, standing up to police brutality, fighting for immigrant rights, and struggling against racism, sexism, homophobia, and all forms of bigotry. We stand in solidarity with oppressed peoples around the world resisting imperialism. We believe the crimes of capitalism call for a new kind of society, and we are committed to fighting for it. To find a PSL branch near you, see our upcoming events and learn more about how you can get involved. PSLweb.org. Again, that's PSLweb.org. Also, the PSL's Liberation newspaper online at liberationnews.org, where you can read our news articles and analysis or purchase a subscription to the print edition. Thank you for listening.